Hello, and welcome to this special edition of the CR Focus podcast. I'm very pleased to be speaking today with Dr. Jonathan Sheffield, OBE. Dr. Sheffield has been Chief Executive Officer of the National Institute for Health Research Clinical Research Network, which is the NIHR CRN to you and me, since October last year, and I'm very grateful indeed for him taking the time to speak with me today.
Good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon. Just a little icebreaker to get the conversation flowing. Could you maybe tell me something that the people listening to this interview might be surprised to learn about you?
I think it's a very difficult question, but I guess the thing that might surprise people is that I would consider myself as not being an active researcher. And I think it's been many years since I did active research. What I would regard myself as is a general manager. What I want to bring to the clinical research networks is good management process for the delivery of patients into studies.
Certainly. But still with the background, the understanding of research.
Absolutely. But I guess people could tell you that my research background is limited, and it's 20 years since I was really ever involved in research.
Right, so a specialist manager.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, before taking up this position, you already had quite an extensive background and experience with relation to the NIHR through its advisory board. Now, that must have enabled you to hit the ground running, so to speak. Now, a little under a year in, how far have you come in turning your vision into a reality?
I think there's two interesting things to that question. The first one is that although I did have a lot of background knowledge of the NIHR, it's only once that you're in amongst it you realise the complexity and the amount of energy and effort that's going into it at the moment. Mm-hmm. So my role on the NIHR advisory panel was that of a medical director for a big teaching hospital, dipping in and dipping out of the NIHR agenda. The minute you start to see the size and the scope of the vision for the NIHR, you begin to realise just how big a task you've got in terms of delivering patients into good clinical research throughout the NHS in England. Mm-hmm. And so I would say, yes, I had a big experience of the background to it, but I don't think I really hit the ground running. And the first 2 to 3 months was spent really understanding the detail and what good work had been done prior to my arrival in the organisation.
Well, as you mentioned, what had been happening previously, back in 2008, I asked Louise Wood of the Department of Health whether she thought the calls that were coming from industry back then to accelerate the pace of change, whether they actually underestimated this scope and this complexity of the changes that are required. Do you think this is still the case? And would you say the closer liaison with industry leaders since then has helped to give industry a more realistic view of what can be achieved?
I think it's helped. I think one of the basic concepts that I bring to the whole piece is that previously people talk about the NHS as if it's one organisation. And the truth is that the last 10 years has seen the gradual devolvement of power in the NHS into individual organisations who are individual statutory bodies. So an NHS Foundation Trust is responsible and accountable for itself as an entirety. And so we cannot talk of the NHS and inflicting change on the NHS from a top-down process. It's very much about involving the local organisations to change. And I think my experience in the NHS will actually help deliver that. So we can issue edicts, but the implementation of those edicts has to be by individual organisations and by cooperation of those individual organisations. And I think that's something that industry and people outside working in the NHS don't really understand, is the hard-earned independence that the organisations have. And in having that hard-earned independence, they guard that independence quite jealously.
Absolutely. That's quite different to the situation in industry when head office can, to a greater extent, dictate what goes on at a local level.
Absolutely. But we're moving now to any competent provider, and that would mean that it won't just be NHS organisations delivering NHS-funded care, it'll be private organisations, and that'll call even a further diversification of the audience, and each organisation has its unique identity and way of doing things. So it's not so much, the NHS has to think more now as a confederation of organisations rather than one single organisation. The funding stream is the same, but in actual fact, the whole membership arrangement for Foundation Trust mean that there's going to be much more local accountability, much more local control over the development of that particular part of the NHS organisational structure. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that has taken time for people to understand.
Yes, and presumably the way that you've been communicating so far is going to continue to be the same direction, but again, even broader in scope, the route you've taken to reach different organisations within the NHS will just be magnified to reach different organisations.
Absolutely. So if I just take the example when I was working in Bristol, we were moving towards 50% of all chemotherapy being delivered at the home of patients by an independent provider of chemotherapy, hospital at home. Now, that is completely different from the traditional model, which is the local oncology unit delivered all that care. The oncologist responsible for that patient remains the same, but the actual delivery of that care goes on in the patient's home under a different organisation's remit. And if we're going to deliver trials to those patients, I have to build a relationship with an independent organisation because they will be delivering NHS care. So there is a huge change in the landscape of the NHS that is just really starting to be realised by the greater public. And some of those changes will be for the benefit of patients, but they will make our task sometimes more difficult. But our job is to be flexible and adaptable in the way that we support that type of research.
Now, I mean, you've mentioned that prior to taking up this position, you were involved with several task forces and several initiatives around modernisation of care. What more can you really bring from those experiences into this work at the NIHR?
All right, I think that there's two things, really. The first thing is that wherever I've worked in healthcare, in the NHS, and this is my 30th year of working in healthcare in England and the NHS, I've always been absolutely impressed and in awe of the commitment of the people that work in the NHS to deliver care to the patients, despite often some very difficult circumstances. And I've had exactly the same experience in the clinical research networks. The people involved in the clinical research networks have an absolute commitment to deliver high quality services to patients through the research that they deliver. And that is reassuring because that gives me immense confidence that the changes that we've done in previous organisations will work in this environment. And the second thing, that the most impressive programme that I've been involved in recent years have been the collaboratives. And these were techniques used from industries such as lean, continuous quality improvement methodologies that were brought over originally into the NHS from the Boston Institute for Health Improvement in terms of the Cancer Collaborative back in 1999, using techniques that were traditionally used in industry and manufacturing industry for measurements of production control, etc. So bringing those tools and techniques and applying them to healthcare, and they caused dramatic improvements in the efficiencies of waiting lists and in the care of patients, and actually in giving patients much more control of their care. Now, those techniques and methodologies are equally applicable in research, because deep down I believe that, as was happening in cancer 10, 15 years ago, the clinicians had great commitment, but sometimes they didn't have the right management tools to deliver the right care at the right time. I think we've got many clinicians who are keen to do research, but they don't necessarily have the tools or the time to do that. What we can provide are tools and times that allow that kind of appropriate general management of the process of research. The academics usually have really big questions they want to ask. There's usually a very good question to be asked, but they do not. There's not been as much work in the systematic management of identification, feasibility studies, and recruitment of patients to hit the time and target. And I think that's all deliverable, provided you use good old-fashioned general management tools that have been available in industry for the last 50 years and that have been available in the NHS for the last 15 years. We need to now transfer those into the academic research environment.
Absolutely. And I think that's going to chime very well with many companies within the commercial sector who I know have been going through just this same process within their clinical operations over the past few years.
Absolutely. I mean, so waiting list management, we use statistical process controls that allow you to demonstrate when you've got either just random variation or significant event variation. industry use that for the management of their trials. We don't use them for the management of trials within the NHS. My expectation is that I will be able to walk into any R&D office in any institution in the NHS in England in the next few years, and I'll be able to go to a board that will show exactly what the performance for every single study that's going on in that organisation is and how they do it. There's a lot of work we have to do to achieve that, but it actually, once you do achieve that, that creates a dramatic improvement in both the quality of the work that we do, but also in the timeliness of our recruitment to these studies. So I believe that we need to get into management of the process in much more detail, because that's what transformed waiting list management in the NHS. Mm-hmm.
In previous conferences, I've heard you speak about your objectives over the next few years.
Yeah.
To do with NHS engagement, performance management, as we've discussed, and also working smarter. I think we've covered a lot of performance management aspects. Could you perhaps expand on the other two areas?
Well, I think, in a way, I'd say that NHS engagement, that seems a funny thing. We now know the NHS changes, that the Secretary of State will now have a duty to promote research in the NHS. That means that it's no longer a nice add-on to the NHS. And why wouldn't you think research is important in an industry that has such rapid turnover of knowledge? Every organisation should be interested in research questions, because they need to see how they can improve the efficiency and effectiveness of their services. So the fact that we would like to see all organisations be research active is a key message from the National Institute for Health Research. But in actual fact now, it's a duty of both the commissioners at all levels to promote that research. And that's not been made explicit before in the NHS. And I think that's good. So there's a top-down process that is happening now,
yes,
right from the Minister of State, right the way through all organisations. And so there'll be an expectation from the new commissioning board, from David Nicholson, that research is actively promoted and delivered in all NHS organisations. That's a big increase in statement. We also have it in the NHS constitution of an expectation, yes, to deliver research. So all the policy processes are there to make our environment much more research and friendly. But top down doesn't work. And so what I need is that the people that are already involved in research on the shop floor, the clinical research nurses that we fund up and down the country, to become those ambassadors for research, yes, to sell the argument on the shop floor. Because I want the nurses on the wards and the doctors on the wards to understand why research is important for them and their jobs, and why it's important for them to want to be involved in research. Mm-hmm. So I want the active process to come from the bottom up. And the ultimate NHS engagement is for patients to want to be involved in research. Yes. And there is clear evidence that most patients think they're already involved in research. Their expectations, they're involved in research. There's a recent Association of Medical Research Charities opinion poll, and it showed that the vast majority of patients would consider being involved in research. We haven't done that active promotion of research to patients. When I was medical director for a teaching hospital, one of the big struggles was to get doctors to wash their hands, to actually put in place the infection control issues that we had. The fact that Semmelweis provided the evidence 200 years ago, before Pasteur, that washing hands was a benefit, seems to be neither here nor there. The thing that made doctors wash their hands was patients being told by organisations that they can always ask a doctor if they've washed their hands. The minute a patient starts asking a doctor if they've washed their hands, the doctors will wash their hands. They'll feel that pressure from the patients. We want our patients to come and say to a doctor, is there any research that I can be involved in? If we get that, that is genuine NHS engagement.
Absolutely.
And that is the way that we would engage the whole of the NHS into research. So we have to have a policy of engagement that targets not just the senior leadership in the NHS, that doesn't just target individuals in the within NHS organisations, but actually gets the membership of those NHS foundation trusts and the patients to be involved. That's a difficult task, but that's a task that we can do jointly with both the public sector, AIHR, but also with industry.
Certainly.
We need to make sure that people get that message, that clinical research is good for patients, and being involved in research is good for their condition. Mm-hmm. Most patients want to do that.